implement the requirements consistently.
Yeah, that is helpful. Thank you. I guess, I mean, based on what you just said, I wonder if you would want to add like a fourth column saying that the reason that this is the answer is a specific, you know, rule or regulation that we already have. So that makes it, you know, gives people like a specific, you know, statute or rule to look at as the basis for the answer, because this is just, we are just curating a list of Q&A for the people. It's something that's already in, you know, all of the official like rules or substantive policy statements that we have, we as the board have issued in the past.
I don't believe staff envisions publicizing this chart. I think it's for more internal use, like I said. That is a good suggestion if we were going to publicize the chart, but I don't view that as the plan.
Okay, that works for me. Thank you.
May I just say one thing quickly? This is Melissa Flint from the association standpoint. I've heard from many members that they are looking for some sort of guidance. I know they're going to the ASPPP website, but still, how are we going to handle that? So if it's not going to be a published document, I'd like for you to guide me how I can convey appropriate information to the membership. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Flint. I thought we were going to put this, you know, as a guidance document and list it as such as a guidance document. I mean, I think we need to let them know here's what the different parameters are, as opposed to me just putting it in thinking I got it. I mean, will we look, Heidi, were you thinking we would publish this or put it on our website or something?
Madam Chair, I think the original vision was yes. By publicizing it, it does. It presents the information in such a way that, you know, it reduces the number of calls and emails that particularly Ms. Folks receives. If that isn't the prudent course of action, if we decide that publicizing it isn't appropriate, you know, that's fine. We will use this as an internal document to respond to inquiries. I mean, we could go either way. Frankly, we just want to be able to give the right and consistent guidance to the applicants.
I'm all for publicizing any information that helps inform applicants or future applicants.
Right.
I do think that if this form might need a little bit of tweaking to include a little bit more explanation so it is more clear to those who may apply in the future. I think that form is easy to understand for most of us because we're familiar with the licensing process, but for those who aren't familiar with the licensing process, this could generate more calls than it will avert.
Right. So I think there needs to be an opening paragraph saying that that the state's moving to the EPPP2 on November 1st. So it kind of explains what all the dates mean. And then, you know, to determine whether you are required to take it, you can utilize this matrix.
And we can, if just so long as the board approves the general notion about who is required to take part two, I think that's what we need. And then I can work with staff to make it easier to understand for future applicants.
Okay. So is everybody comfortable with the idea of providing a document like this and then providing it so it helps individuals understand what is required? I like it. I think it could be, you know, tweaked, but for the most part, I think it's really a good document. Anyone else?
When is this document going to be available?
Hopefully the sooner the better.
And my other thought is maybe you can indicate when they read this matrix and figure out which box they relate to, they could say at this time only, and this information is good for another 30 days. And, you know, without promising the future.
Well, I would definitely date it or know something. Yeah. I mean, do you want people to help you work on it? You want to commit or a group to look at it? Or Heidi, what would you like to do?
if Ms. Galvin has specific ideas for how to make this usable, then, you know, I'm sure we can sit down with her and work on it. What I neglected to share at the beginning of this item is that we did present the scenarios to Dr. Meyer. We felt that it would be helpful to have at least one board member with application expertise to review it and weigh in. So his feedback was very helpful. So I would go back to him again as well for some input and feedback.
All right, then I would make a motion that we approve the concept, the structure. It needs, you know, we can tweak it. You'll work with Dr. Meyer and Ms. Galvin on it. And then I think as soon as we think it's ready, and hopefully sooner the better, I think people want to know what the plan is. Well, then we can post it. Does that work for everybody? Is that a motion? Do I need a second? Do we need a motion?
Seconded.
All right, we got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, any opposed? Nope. So we're moving ahead. All right, so that takes care of item number...
Madam Chair, I think we still need the last row, which is still like in the needs discussion phase, I believe.
I think so with the last row, I think what the thoughts were, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you are in another state, in state A, and you take ERPP, but do not get licensed there, and you come here to Arizona, then you do have to take the part two. But if you are in the different state, state A, and you take ERPP, you get licensed, you work a year, then you can come to Arizona and get a license under universal recognition. Because that umbrella of universal recognition has very specific umbrella guidelines to it.
Right, so and that's why I was thinking maybe we need a motion just to, you know, okay, give staff that yes or no answer to fill that column.
Now, this is Kathy. I do have a question about that, though, because there's an entire year that they may be licensed and had only passed part one. Are you wanting people who have been licensed less than a year to have to take part two to be licensed in Arizona?
Yes, because you don't fall underneath universal recognition if it's not more than a year in another state. Dr. Wahansky, is that right?
Correct. Well, we also have people who apply for licensure who are not moving to Arizona, so they don't qualify under universal recognition.
Correct.
So that's why I'm asking, is are we making that 1 year the cutoff?
Well, I think we're making that they have to fall within the realm of universal recognition. So if you got your ERPP and you've worked the year, because that's what it requires, and you come here, then no, you don't have to.
Right, but that leaves the category of, I apologize for jumping in, but it leaves that category of those who are not moving here but getting licensed anyway. Are we going to have a different standard for people who are applying under a waiver?
But I thought under universal recognition you have to move here.
Yeah, but I'm referring to the other application, our standard application, psychologist application for licensure, and they license by waiver, which encompasses anywhere from not licensed to 20 years or more licensed. That needs to be addressed in terms of, is ERPP part one sufficient, or do they have to pass part two too?
Well, if they fall underneath the 20-year waiver, they just get the license. I know, Dr. Wahansky, you're the expert here. You're on mute.
I'm back again. What's the question?
Well, the board has set the 1 year and under universal recognition, they don't have to pass part two, but the people who are licensing by waiver, at what point do they need to pass part two, or are we just including all of them?
If they have already passed one and they are licensed, then they're under waiver, then they're grandfathered.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That's the existing law as it stands now. We're not changing that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Is everybody in agreement with that? That's the existing law. We're all good. All right. So I think what Mr. Diner's, just to go back to what Mr. Diner said, was that if you haven't had your license for a year, you don't fall underneath universal recognition, then you would have to take the EPPP part two. So does that make sense, Kathy? Is that everything you need?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. So we're good? All right. Let's move to the next item. This is a item some of us are very familiar with. Discussion, consideration, possible action relating to ARS 2310-26 addressing regulations of independent medical evaluations as performed by psychologists. Executive Director, did you want
to? Yes, Madam Chair. Back in at your April meeting, the board requested this topic be placed on a future meeting agenda. The May and June agendas were quite full, and so it's been some since we've had a chance to bring this back to you. I think you're familiar with the issue relative to the statute ARS 2310-26, periodic medical examination of employee, which the language is presented to you in the memorandum, and it's interpreted to include psychologists. So this is before the board for perhaps your final discussion on the matter, or final for now.
Well, I think it was brought because at one point there was the issue that the press came and asked about it or something. And so as much as some of were frustrated at one point because of a certain complaint case we had, the reality is this is a statute that, you know, covers those in the medical evaluation to do independent evaluations. And there's not much we can do about that. Is there any thoughts, discussion on this?
Madam Chair, I think for me, I think at the time that we proposed that for this to be on a future agenda, I think part of the discussion was around what we could do potentially to look into the legislation and what we could do to influence that. Because while, yes, it was related kind of to one case, I mean, this is likely an issue that we're going to see again. And it's a loophole that's a huge disservice to individuals that are seeking significant help. And these are individuals that have provided service to the state and continue to provide services to the state. And this loophole has made it difficult for them to access those services. And so I think that in previous discussions, that was kind of my interpretation of why we wanted it on the agenda, was to look at what could we do to influence, whether it be something that we look at for statutory change, or what could we do to help influence some of that.
Is this any different than when a psychologist is asked by the courts to do an evaluation? Aren't they covered like this, that they can't be complaints against their outcome?
Correct.
Is that correct?
What you have here is a statute that includes psychologists as physicians conducting a psychological evaluation in a workman's comp case.
Right.
Or independent medical eval for a workman's comp case. And we had a psychologist who performed identical, if not inappropriate, evaluations on a whole series of public safety officers, police officers from multiple jurisdictions, and came up with the same finding on all of them. We found, after a two-day review of her work, that it was shoddy at best, inappropriate, and we were very concerned. And then we were told, my God, you have no standing to hear this because it's immunity and we can't look at it as a board because it's an IME. And the question here then becomes, do we want to continue to have this practice in Arizona? Do we want to hope our psychologists don't abuse the privilege of doing independent things without the oversight of the board? Or does the board want to suggest that perhaps the board should review or have the ability when necessary to review IMEs. And that's a fairly touchy discussion that we want to have. When you start taking things outside of oversight of this board, and we've seen what I consider to be half a dozen tragic examples over the past couple of years, and then the psychologist skipped town, it was highly concerning, if not heartbreaking, to look at those public safety officers who most of them had 10 to 20 years in protecting my butt, and say to them, I'm sorry, we don't have jurisdiction and can't help you. That was a tragic, tragic day that still pulls on the heartstrings of those of us who were there.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, if I may make a few observations.
Mr. Diner.
When I was looking at this, my concern was that the statute just uses the word physician, and that word is actually defined in the regulations that the Industrial Commission has issued. So the definition for physician that includes psychologists is part of the Industrial Commission regulations. I believe that's in Ms. Galvin's memo as well. It's R20-5-102. So my concern is it's the Industrial Commission that has included psychologists within the definition of physicians and then makes that statute applicable to psychologists. So given that the Industrial Commission is asserting authority, you know, because they have issued these rules, what is the role of our board in saying anything about the topic? I mean, I don't want to be in a situation where, you know, it's the Industrial Commission versus the Psychologist Examiner's Board. So that's my main concern. I have others, but I mean, I'll kind of start with that.
If the board were so inclined to undertake a statutory change that would allow this board to review IMEs performed by psychologists to determine if there was unprofessional conduct, the statute could be written as such that says, notwithstanding any other statute or regulation to the contrary, psychologists who conduct IMEs may be brought before the regulatory board, et cetera.
Can that be a motion?
No, that.
I was just giving, trying to answer Mr. Diner's question about the rule in the Industrial Commission's purview that says psychologists are included as physicians. Basically, I think he was asking how would we, you know, overrule something that was in the Industrial Commission's authority. And one way to do that would be to get a statute that says, notwithstanding any other law or regulation, a psychologist may be found to have engaged in unprofessional conduct who's conducted an IME, et cetera, et cetera.
So would be, I think, though, to be fair, though, then are we asking those that are appointed by the court to do, you know, custody evaluations or whatever they do, you know, with the custody of the children? They right now, as I my understand it, they have immunity, or you know, they're not, you can't go after them for their right recommendation. Did we want to change that too?
Right. So, well, that's the kind of follow-up concern with that is, typically in any kind of, you know, any person who is designated as an expert witness in state court proceedings, their opinion testimony is, you know, if that's viewed as unprofessional, then the question is, do these licensing boards, I mean, it could be psychologists, it could be any other professional board, do they get to kind of, you know, have a mini trial of their own as to the opinions that that person expressed in the state court proceedings? And here it seems like the concern is the testifying psychologists are testifying, I would assume, before the Industrial Commission for workers' comp cases. So the question is, if the Industrial Commission is kind of giving them immunity from being prosecuted for unprofessional conduct by their professional boards, I mean, I'm a bit skeptical that the Industrial Commission can tell us as the psychology board, you know, that we can't assert our jurisdiction. But my concern there is, I mean, I don't want to get into a, you know, state agency versus state agency fight on this. So I want to explore ways or solutions that we can address this problem. I believe, I mean, if I'm, I mean, my personal thoughts on this are, I mean, if we have jurisdiction over all of our licensees, so if the licensees committed some unprofessional conduct, I mean, we should have jurisdiction to review those sort of complaints. But how we do it in this context is maybe going to be tricky.
We, several of us on this board, Mr. Diner, you know, sat through a case that was just, like Dr. Bohansky said, was heart-wrenching. The psychologist involved was actually, I think, living in Hawaii and was brought here and did the evaluations. So I guess was licensed here or something. But, you know, we totally felt as though there was the evaluations were not, there were some big issues with it. And so I guess the concern was, is with sometimes with the Industrial Commission is, you know, is the psychologist is hired, but it's hired usually by the organization that the person worked for. So, you know, are they really that, or hopefully they're looking at it as a neutral party. But, so, you know, what do you do in a situation where you truly feel as though the person has not done an appropriate evaluation? And that's where we were at. And then we felt very we felt very discouraged when we didn't feel like we could take this forward and do something with it because of the statute that the Industrial Commission had. But Mr. Diner, do you think that we would have a stance based on our rules to be able to move forward on something like that?
Well, I mean, I would say, I mean, it would be a situation where, you know, it leads to almost like a finger pointing situation, because if a licensee, you know, if we act on a complaint, the licensee is going to point and say a sister agency has given me immunity from this. So, you know, I get a, you know, rain check on this. Mm-hmm. And in the Industrial Commission, you know, maybe the other side is going to argue if we try to assert jurisdiction. Well, look, you know, the sister agency has asserted jurisdiction. They haven't given immunity, or they have given immunity, you know. So it kind of becomes this, you know, fight. We all go in circles and no one, you know, gets to the actual public safety issues that are underlying all of these complaints.
Right. And I think we just had an example, and hopefully it was a one-off that was just, left us all feeling a little bit like we should have been able to do something. You know, that's what we're here for, and we weren't.
And Madam Chair, if I'm not mistaken, the issue was really, it wasn't just the fact that there was immunity for the licensee, but also just the nature of the complaint, because the complaint came in as a disagreement of the findings. And so if the complaint would have come in as the wrong report being used, or, you know, all the things that we were able to find, because there was no way using the documentation that even the psychologist that reviewed the documentation could have rendered the diagnosis. The issue had nothing to do with a disagreement of the findings at the end of the complaint. It was the utilization of the assessments and scope of practice and all of these other things. And so I think that's the part that stands out to me as most concerning, is we can't simply expect the public to learn how to navigate that loophole and be able to come forward and be like, well, you know, I really just don't think they have the right training to utilize this assessment or what have you, because they're not going to know that. They're only going to know that something didn't seem right about the process.
Right. And once they file, I don't think we can give them that kind of guidance
So is there, I mean, this maybe is a question for Ms. Gavin, but, you know, just for the group, is there any way for us to maybe seek some sort of reconciliation with, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, I'm kind of drawing from some of my experience with the legislative process and just negotiations and opening diplomatic channels, if you will. Is there a way for our staff to speak with the Industrial Commission staff and try to see, you know, what works for both agencies? Because we, I mean, I think, I mean, all of us are probably, you know, going to agree that we should exercise jurisdiction on these complaints. But I mean, if it can't be the case that we are exercising jurisdiction when there is the Industrial Commission saying you can't. And I mean, frankly, I mean, it's not the Industrial Commission's job to overrule us on those kind of things, but here we are. I mean, we have a regulation that they issued that, you know, says, and it, I mean, they seem to, you know, kind of hang the hat on the statute, but all the statute says is the physician is not subject to a complaint with the physician's licensing board. And then the Industrial Commission comes in and defines physicians as including psychologists. And that's where the problem is. The Industrial Commission is sort of, you know, by issuing that regulation has even taken the choice from our hands as to whether we can or cannot exercise jurisdiction. So I guess, I mean, there may be an easy solution to this, but I think without getting the Industrial Commission to talk with us, or, you know, their staff to talk with our staff, it might just seem that any solution we come up with, you know, maybe in this meeting or, you know, over the course of several meetings, would just be viewed as too abrasive and creating this, you know, agency versus agency situation. And I can even imagine this being a nightmare for the AG's office, because I mean, you're kind of, you know, trying to maintain the peace, so to speak. But, you know, that's kind of like the structural problem I have with this.
I agree. And I think the Industrial Commission is just one of several stakeholders that would want to weigh in on this. You would have the medical board, the osteopath board, you would have the workers' compensation bar members who would want to weigh in on this. I think, and those are just a few that I can think of, but this would be a very significant issue for all of those people that I named.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, I'm wondering, I know within our rules or statutes, I forget which is which, we have something about claims, which, you know, we went through some changes on that when that issue came up. But I wonder if something within all that could be stated that those who have had an IME, if they wish to file a complaint, be advised that you can't do it, you know, as per this policy about physicians. However, if you want to do it this other way, the board can address that, you know, kind of just state it on our website somehow. Can that be done without getting us in trouble?
Ms. Galvin shaking her head no.
I don't believe so, given the statutory framework that's in place.
Okay, that'd be a nice loophole if there were such a thing, but apparently there isn't.
I'd be out of a job if you could just do what you want and notwithstanding.
All right, so here we are, it's the same situation. You know, do we want to open up conversation with Industrial Commission? Do we want to, maybe to put some feelers out there and see what the other the medical and other boards think?
Madam Chair, Ms. Galvin, if I'm not, I could be mistaken, but I think that Mr. Cohen, Larry Cohen, was also reviewing this. I wonder if that's one of the stakeholders we start with and see if they've done any work or what approach they've kind of had toward the topic, and maybe we just piggyback and support that. I don't know I don't know if that'd be an option, but I believe there's other stakeholders too that are looking into how to fix this for future instances as well.
I recall that too with Mr. Cohen. Do we want to reach out and see what if they're pursuing anything?
Sure.
Dr. Bob, would you say?
Yeah, let's ask Larry where it's ended up.
Okay. All right. Heidi, do you know Larry? All right. So can you check with him and then get back with us and see what, we'll see if the scuttlebutt is out there, if anything's doing anything, if anybody's doing anything, if we want to partner or, support or nothing,
I certainly will.
All righty. Next item is discussion and consideration possible action regarding licensure and regulatory issues related to COVID-19. Executive Director?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is really an open agenda item where we could be discussing a host of issues relative to COVID-19 and regulating in the days of COVID-19 and post-COVID-19. Recently, the Committee on Behavior Analysts, they've had opportunity to have some conversations on a multitude of regulatory issues precipitated by the pandemic. And as you know, the board has considered and granted a pretty comprehensive series of waivers, exemptions, temporary licensure opportunities for a specific and limited duration. We're hearing conversations that regulatory groups, regulatory leaders are sort of asking questions about how flexible should we be as regulators? Are we giving too much? Is there such a thing as giving too much? Weighing the interests of what's in the best interest of the public. And also ensuring that people receive the care and treatment that they need. Can we look closer at, our processes for how we are prioritizing or, addressing certain cases, maybe in a pandemic situation, we take a lighter touch and we look more at opportunities to remediate and support licensees the pandemic may have compelled them to make a decision they wouldn't do otherwise. We're also hearing conversations about how, once we emerge from this situation, it's never going to be normal again. As we've discussed earlier today, telehealth, telepractice is here to stay. How do we make sure that it's done well, effectively, and supported? Deregulation of licensure, I think, is also a theme. We're hearing policymakers suggest that if we relax requirements for this period of time, why not institute them on a permanent basis? So those are the kinds of conversations that are starting to be held. I think you, Madam Chair, you heard your colleagues in an ASPBB-hosted meeting discuss some of these issues too. So the CBA asked for the board to take up this conversation and hopefully the two groups, the committee and the board, sort of work in tandem or determine how and whether to work in tandem going forward. And it may be that Dr. Davis-Wilson and Dr. Davey also want to chime in because obviously they were very engaged in that discussion that happened in the CBA meetings.
All right, Dr. Davey, Dr. Davis-Wilson, any comments?
I have nothing to add. I think really the difficulty in the position that we're at is that there is a lot of conversation. It looks like, for the most part, the state of emergency and the pandemic is here to stay for a while. And we, on a national level, have concerns with the acceptability of telehealth as a delivery modality, because that's been something that's been historically challenging for behavior analysts. And we're in very similar boats to what Dr. Bohansky alluded to earlier of Access having a temporary code set for us right now that appears to be on the chopping block coming up in the future when the pandemic is over. And so I think trying to figure out what ways we can support licensees through kind of the unpredictability and instability of everything that's going on. I mean, I know with Ms. Pacnon, we've talked about one of the challenges as behavior analysts that we run into is our certification board is able to make rapid changes. And they're able to do that with just very quick emails out, like effective yesterday, you guys can now do this. And educating our local licensees that, like, well, wait a second, you always have to crosswalk that back. And while we recognize the importance of why they're making the changes in light of the pandemic, it's become very challenging from an education standpoint for the licensees here in Arizona, because it is kind of a flip-flop and they're having to interpret all of that pretty rapidly. That's all I think.
Well, I did meet with the other chairs, and a lot of them were very, very similar to us, is that they've made these stipulations based on the state of emergency, and they have expirations like we have after the state of emergency. One of the states said they weren't even meeting because their attorney general or whatever wouldn't allow them to even meet on Zoom or video conference. So they haven't even met since, you know, it hit. So then we all started talking about how we all do it. And a lot of the other organizations are doing a Zoom meeting like we are. So, I think we've done a lot of great measures at this point. I think it is what it is until we see where we're going with this pandemic. I think we telehealth, like Dr. Bohansky and Dr. Davis Wilson, I think we do want to, you know, as a group, talk about that and support that. We're going to put that on the next agenda and the importance of that, of recognizing it. But other than that, I don't have any specific other changes I would suggest given this, where we are today. Any other comments? Anyone else have a different thought?
Madam Chair, if I may, I see part of my responsibility as, you know, keeping this board aware of these issues and giving you opportunity to hear these conversations, the ones that I'm hearing, or, you know, at least summarize them succinctly for your purposes so you're informed and you can make the right decisions. I just think this is an incredibly challenging time for regulators, and it's not going to get any easier when the emergency is over. It's emerging, you know, from the emergency and restoring regulation. What does that look like? I think it's just, we're going to have to understand it's a process we're going to have to work through.
Thank you for that. All right, next, item 21, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed waiver of fee for psychologists and behavior analyst licensee. Ms. Poe.
Yes, Madam Chair. So this item, currently the board charges a $2 fee for each written license verification, and board staff is recommending that the $2 fee be waived or eliminated. The rationale for this change is that it's a very common request. I get several requests daily for this, and the time involved for me to contact the licensee and explain how they can pay the fee online or mail in the check takes much more time. It's costlier than the fee itself in my time in collecting the $2 fee.
And I move we waive the fee.
All right, we have a motion to waive the fee. Great job, Ms. Poe. Is there a second?
A second.
We got a motion and a second. Ms. Poe, that's probably the quickest one we've had. All right, any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding election for board secretary. We are so sad, Dr. Flowers, this is your last meeting with us, and Dr. Flowers is currently the board secretary. We're looking for someone, and Dr. Malott mentioned she'd be happy to do it if no one else puts her name in the hat. I don't know if Dr. Gill, if you're interested. It's a fun position. Doesn't take a lot of time. They just sign a lot of documents, you know, minutes and that kind of stuff. But if you guys are interested.
I nominate Dr. Malott.
All right, got a nomination for Dr. Malott. Anyone else want to self-nominate or nominate?
One more time.
All right, so we got a motion for Dr. Malott. Is there a second?
Okay. Second.
All right.
So I move Dr. Malott elected by acclamation.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, the motion carries.
All right, last item, sort of, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding drafts, substantive policy statement concerning documentation requirements for a written training plan for supervised postdoctoral experience. Executive Director.
Yes, Madam Chair. So this was originally envisioned by ARC to consist of a draft correspondence to advise a specific postdoctoral experience training program site that the elements of their training plans were not meeting ARC's expectations. There were deficiencies specific to lack of goals and lack of measurable objectives designed to achieve those goals. So when we met on Tuesday with Ms. Galvin to review the agenda, Ms. Galvin suggested we shift direction and instead, or first, adopt a substantive policy statement that to which we can cite any correspondence, and that substantive policy statement would reflect that we expect that the postdoctoral training program plans contain all the elements that I have outlined in the memo A through I, which I won't recite. These are the same elements as those that exist or those that are required for applying for a temporary license.
All right, thank you very much. So is everybody in favor of the staff draft up a substantive policy statement regarding the training plans? And then if we say yes, then you'll bring it to us at the next meeting to look at. Is that correct?
That is correct. And also this would be placed on the list of rule revisions that we will next address in the next batch, if you will. So a substantive policy statement is a short-term solution. The better solution is we specify the requirements and rule.
All right. Is there a motion to agree to a substantive policy statement?
So moved.
Thank you. And is there a second?
I second.
Thank you. We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. New agenda items for the future. I believe we have Dr. Bohansky's item regarding telehealth and insurance. We'll put that on the agenda. Are there any other agenda items that committee members would like to see on the next agenda?
Do you want to bring back? Sorry, Dr. Gill, please continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just asking quickly about, we had a draft letter that was intended to be sent to Barrows regarding certain documentation that was missing. And I wonder if that's still on board or whether that was put on hold.
We're putting it on hold because we don't really have a policy or documentation that says this is what needs to be in your training. And so that's why we kind of chatted and said, hey, let's do the substantive policy statement, because we can't tell someone, hey, your training manual is not good unless we specific about what we're requesting.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Diner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to quickly mention, do we want to bring back the Industrial Commission physician regulation back?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate that. Any other items? All right, so before we adjourn, I want to just a big congratulations again to Dr. Bohansky on receiving his Distinguished Service in Regulation Award. And also a big thank you to Dr. Flowers for your 5 years of service on this board and for all the time and effort you've put on it for the service of Arizona residents. We're going to miss you.
Oh, thank you. It's been a privilege to work with all of you. I never thought I'd get to know behavior analysts, but I've met some outstanding behavior analysts as well as a bonus to the experience.
Oh, great. And, you know, you can always just come and listen in. You know, you're always welcome.
Yeah, I can maybe be in the audience and critique it.
There you go. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn? See, no one wants to leave.
So moved.
Got a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Dr. Flowers, best wishes. Take care.
Thank you. It's been great.